I'm going to be speaking on a well-known text that we often read at this time of year, and it's Isaiah chapter 9. But I just want us to look at that again with fresh eyes this morning. And I want us just to think about what actually happened when Jesus came into the world. Because something happened. Something happened. And I suppose if I were to ask you what you might think I'm referring to when I say something happened when Jesus came, you'd probably come up with a whole list of answers. And no doubt every one of them would be true. Because a number of things did happen at the coming of Jesus into this world. But whenever I think about the text we're going to use and other scriptures that we're going to build on, it just struck me again as I looked at them all that the Bible writers, when speaking of the incarnation and speaking of the uniqueness of Jesus coming into this world and the impact that that was going to make, they tended to use a metaphor, a description, a picture that we can find threaded through quite a number of their writings. And it's the idea of darkness and light. And whenever we think about the world that Jesus came into, and we think about the world we live in, and we think about the world as it will be when Jesus returns, I want us to think about that. Keep that image in our mind. Darkness and light. And whether it's the Old Testament prophecies, which is where we're going to be reading in Isaiah, of course, or whether it's the words of Jesus himself regarding his mission when he came and talked and taught, or whether it's the writing of the apostles who give us explanations, over and over and over again, the same picture is used, that of a great light piercing the darkness. So Isaiah 9, as we've mentioned, and of course verse 2, the people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. And then verse 6, just showing you that this is a messianic passage. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. So according to that prophecy, something was going to happen. And it was going to be transformative. So transformative that it could be described in these terms that are used. Described as darkness being dispelled by a great light. So I find that in the Old Testament, there's a clear example of the use of light and darkness when prophesying about the coming of the sun. Then I read that around about the time of Jesus' birth, he was brought as an infant, as you know, into the temple in Jerusalem, where his mother and Joseph encountered an old man called Simeon. Simeon is described by Luke as being devout, just, but also as waiting for something to happen. So Isaiah talks about something's going to happen, and here we find a man or another old lady called Anna, and they're waiting for something to happen. And he's waiting for the Lord to do something in the history of the people of Israel. He's a rather special old man, Simeon, because we read that the Holy Ghost was upon him. And he was in such a good standing with the Lord that the Lord was revealing things to him. He was hearing from God. In short, we would say today, Simeon was walking in the Spirit. There's a challenge for us all. when we went through the letters of the Lord to the churches in Revelation, we thought about John on the Isle of Patmos, and he was in the Spirit, even though he was a prisoner. He was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. And during that encounter that Simeon had with Mary and Joseph, and he's in the presence now of Jesus the baby, this is what Simeon says, Luke 2 and 29, "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word. For my eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles or the nations, and the glory of thy people, Israel." And that literal translation of verse 32 there is the baby was going to be a revealer. Strictly speaking, it has to do with the idea of removing a veil. So, a light in that sense. Daniel wrote about the same concept in Daniel 2 and 22, where he says about God, he reveals the deep and secret things. And it's interesting that he uses the same description, the same picture. Because Daniel goes on to say, he knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. So, something was going to happen, and whenever Simeon and Anna were in the temple, they were there because they were waiting for something to happen. And something did happen. Jesus came. The world was about to have a revelation like no other. God coming down. Emmanuel, God with us. And he was coming as light into this world's darkness. Not only was he a light to lighten the Gentiles, but also he would be the glory of Israel, the glory of thy people, Israel. Israel was supposed to be that nation that would stand out from all the others. They were going to be that nation who had the covenant relationship with God, and it was God's intention that Israel should point the world to him, that the world should look at them and be drawn to their God, that they should be bringing glory to his name. Israel was to be glorious in holiness, but they failed. She failed miserably, we might say. But there was going to be a moment in which there was going to be a revelation of the glory of God, and that Jesus would come through Israel, as he did. So we have a prophecy before his birth that uses the language of light and darkness. We have the blessing from Simeon at the time of his birth that uses the same language, and in so doing it connects us with the realization of the fulfillment of Isaiah 9. But then we have the teaching of Jesus himself as he walked on this earth. John 8 and verse 12. "Then spake Jesus, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." And in one of the most famous gospel passages that we could possibly ever turn to, which is John 3, we read this in John 3 from verse 19. "And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world. Men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil." So, we have a prophecy before his birth that uses the language of light and darkness. We have the blessing at the time of his birth, which uses the same language. We have the teaching of Jesus himself, where he uses the same language. But then there's also the teaching of the apostles. Remember, the apostles were those who had been with Jesus, and some of them had beheld his glory. And the Apostle John writes in his introduction to the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 5, "The light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." And in 1 John 2, "Again, a new commandment I write unto you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is past, and the true light now shineth." Another apostle called Paul describes his mission from God in Acts 26, where he explains that he was sent to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan unto God. So Paul's using these pictures, but as he does so, he's making a connection there And he connected the light with God and the darkness with Satan. Something then emphasized again in his letter to the church at Colossae in chapter 1 and verse 13, where he teaches that God has delivered us from the power of darkness and has translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son. So again, Paul is demonstrating that the darkness is the opposite of being in Christ. Then Paul says this in Ephesians 5 and 8, "For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye in the Lord, are ye light in the Lord, walk as children of light." In 1 Thessalonians 5 and 5, "Ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness." And not to be left out, the Apostle Peter takes up this language in 1 Peter 2 and 9. Says that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So there's a consistency in the use of this picture. The scriptures record for us, I believe, in what we've selected here, the deliberate use of these contrasting pictures of darkness and light right from before Jesus came, right until this very time. Something happened, and it's condensed into this idea. Light came, and light came into darkness. And light makes a difference. Light makes a dramatic difference. Even a tiny flame on one candle in a blackened room makes a difference. Light makes a difference. Jesus came. Something happened. And this is the picture that we have running through in relation to who Jesus was and what Jesus came to do. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. So there Isaiah is describing the condition that would be prevalent when the child would be born and the son would be given. He would enter a world where the vast majority of people would be walking indeed in darkness. And that's why Zacharias, the father of John the Baptist, said this about John in Luke 1 and 76. "And thou, child, shalt be called the prophet of the highest, for thou shalt go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation unto his people by the remission of their sins, through the tender mercy of our God, whereby the day spring from on high hath visited us, to give light to them that sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet on the way of peace." And then he goes on to mention this, the child grew, and so on. I think we've got so used to this sort of language in Scripture, darkness and light, that it just becomes something we say. We know the verses. I'm sure there's not one of those verses I quoted that you didn't already know and could probably finish them in your mind as I quoted them. But do we really understand the depth of the meaning that's being conveyed by this? And the depths of the darkness that pervaded the world when Jesus came. Yes, when Jesus came, there was certainly an abundance of movements in the world, especially in the Greek-speaking world at that time. There was an abundance of philosophical ideas and new religious ideas. Many, many things were being written and the writings were being distributed. There were colleges being set up all over the place. There was a real spurt in the arts all at that time. All of that was going on. But with regard to the truth about God and truly walking with God and truly pleasing with God, truly knowing God, when Jesus came, he came into a situation of great darkness. Who likes the dark evenings? Just one. Well, the only good thing about the dark evenings is when folk come round to the house, they don't see if you've cut the grass or not, or if you've brushed up the leaves, and if you put on a wee lamp in the corner of the room, they don't know if you've dusted the room or not. So you can get away with a whole lot in the dark evenings. I think the shortest day was Friday, according to my research. So we're on the turn. Just on the turn. But we'll soon be, before you know it, the way life's going, we will be in spring before you realise it. But we spend a huge proportion of our lives here in Northern Ireland in darkness, in physical darkness. But of course we've adapted to that, haven't we? Here we are in this room, and look at all the lights that are on. And because of all these adaptations that we've made to get our way around the constraints of living in a country where there's so much darkness, we're able to do things that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. We're still able to, we can work through the night if we decide to. With all the floodlit pitches, you can have sports through the night, you can socialise through the night, you can travel long distances through the night because of our headlights and lighted roads and all of this. We have done so much to get around the darkness, but it's all been by the addition of light, hasn't it? Even though it's created light, it's all been about using light. Darkness is still darkness. And as I looked at how we use even the term darkness today, there are actually few words in our English language that have such a wide use as the word darkness. It certainly can describe the absence of light, but it also can describe a lot of other things. It can describe a sense of hopelessness, can't it? There are many today, and they struggle with mental health issues. And I've heard folk talk about going through these periods when they were at their worst, and they've talked about them being dark days. There are many of you, and I'm sure, like me, you've gone through something, and it has maybe even been described by you as it has been described by me at times. You feel you're in a tunnel, and what do we say? We can't see a light at the end of the tunnel. Darkness can also describe a tragedy. Something awful and unexpected and sudden can happen. It can happen to an organization, it can happen to a school. These mass shootings that we hear about, that's a dark day for that school. It can happen in a community. Some disaster that happens, and it will forever be referred to as a dark day. And even during the time of terrorism that is referred to as the Troubles in Northern Ireland, there are those who talk about certain events as the darkest day, even of the Troubles. Dark times. Darkness can also describe ignorance and lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. In European history, the period between the 5th and 14th centuries, which was a long time, it's often referred to as the Dark Ages. And amongst a host of other reasons, one reason is that the Church of Rome held back a lot of advances in science, and they also kept the masses in a state of illiteracy for their own ends. Darkness can also describe deception. If you were living in North Korea today, you would be constantly fed on their propaganda, where they tell you that all of us who live in the West, our lives are absolutely miserable, we have nothing, we're destitute, and we would just do anything to be able to live in North Korea. That's the propaganda that the poor souls in North Korea are being fed constantly. The darkness of deception, being in the dark. And darkness isn't the only word that is used in connection with these conditions that we've just been looking at. There are a host of others that are related to darkness. We can talk about shadowy things, shady things, murky things. But of course, one of the most frequent uses of darkness, and certainly from a scriptural perspective, is that it describes evil. That which is sinister, particularly that which is evil. You know, something, as I thought about the different uses of the word darkness and realize that every one of those uses that we've just looked at, but we can actually see that around us today in our world, in our day and generation. So all of that was there when Jesus came. And it will also be here in a more increasing way when Jesus comes again. But around us today, we are in dark days. The world's in a mess. I'm glad I'm walking in the light, are you? I'm sure many of you who perhaps were saved later in life, you can look back to a time when you hadn't the light. You can maybe look back to a time where you were groping in the darkness and you were just grasping at anything to get pleasure, to feel fulfilled, to have satisfaction. But sadly, I think today we're living in an era where society has turned its back on the light. But you can't do that and have nothing, because what you'll have, if you don't want the light, is darkness. Men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. You know, if the Christian faith was so bad, then you'd think that, as we mentioned in our studies in Psalm 2, if we are living in a post-Christian era, you'd think that everything would be wonderful when we get rid of Christianity. I think the evidence stands for itself. Extinguish Christianity, and what are we left with? A world in a mess. No moral compass. Hopelessness. Off the scale. To hear a local head teacher say that there had never been a time when there were so many primary school children presenting with mental health issues. Pray for our schools. There's something badly wrong, isn't there? The people walked in darkness. Do you know what impacted me again as I looked at that? Because we read these verses over and they're so familiar to us. When Isaiah was given that vision, that prophecy, he saw people. Just as John in the Revelation, he saw people. He saw a great number that no man could, number of every kindred, tongue, people and nation. Well, here we have Isaiah, and he sees people walking in darkness. And they're real people. This is not just a phrase. These are real people. And they have real problems. They're a despairing people. A people gripped by this darkness, groping in this darkness. A people who are lost in this darkness. Actual people. They're as good as blind because of the denseness of the darkness that has engulfed them. The darkness that all springs from the darkness of evil. Although it has many expressions. He goes on to say, and they dwell in a land of the shadow of death. Living under that shadow, death is real. Now, whether they feel that, there are so many people today don't want to think about death. But it's a reality. It's a great leveler. It's no respecter of persons. It's inescapable. And they're living with that sentence of death over them because it's appointed unto man once to die. And in life they're in darkness, but when they cross over into death, it will be into outer darkness. But thankfully, that's not all the prophet saw. Yes, the people who saw them walking in darkness, yes indeed, and in the shadow of death, but they've seen a great light. That's the wonder. That's the hope. That's the thing that happened when Jesus came. We could put all the other elements together. And we, as a world, have seen a great light. Whether we want to think about that, whether we want to read about that, whether we want to hear a sermon or not, whether we want to be exposed to that or not, The light has come. Jesus has come. The antidote for all darkness isn't more darkness. And sadly, so many people in the world are fumbling around and they're just going from one dark and evil thing to another. And one thing plunges them into deeper darkness, and on it goes. And darkness can't transform itself. It's only God who can say, "Let there be light." But then there's something else. Darkness can't overcome light. You could go down into the deepest abandoned coal mine that there is under this earth, and you'll be in darkness that you've never experienced before. But the minute you strike a match, that darkness is transformed by a match. The darkness, although it's massive, although it's huge, although it's everywhere around you, it cannot beat the tiny light from a match. That's amazing, isn't it? And into this dark world came a great light. Came Jesus, the one who has the power to conquer darkness. And that's the message. That's the prophecy. That's the blessing that Simeon had in mind. Those are the words of Jesus. This is the teaching of the apostles. That's why they've consistently used this picture. Because it's an amazing picture. Something happened. Light came. And his name is Jesus. You know, we're supposed to be lights. This is what Jesus said in Matthew 5. "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works," and what? Not be directed to you. Directed to glorify your Father which is in heaven. Jesus is shining in this world today through his body, the church. Or he should be. Because as Jesus said there himself, "Let your light so shine," because there is the possibility that you and I can hide our light and deprive this dark and dying world of the light that they need to see. What about us? Are others seeing Jesus in me and in you? We're going one day to a place where there is going to be no created light. The Lamb is the light. We can't really understand that. We can't get our minds around that because we live in this planet and this is our environment. This is all we know. But we're going to be in a place of light that's beyond our imagination. But you know the downside of that? If you're here today and you're not saved, you're going to outer darkness. It won't be hell, the party capital of eternity. It will be outer darkness. What a contrast. See, light is descriptive of God's nature. God is light and in him is no darkness at all. 1 John 1:5. It's descriptive of God's presence, as we've already mentioned, Revelation 21:22, that there is no night in heaven. No night in eternity. Why? Because God's present. And he is there. And God is not in hell. You'll be separated from him from all eternity if in this life you refuse to see the light and then walk in the light. I have about 8 more pages to go, but that clock's telling me to abandon them. So, think of Peter's words. That you and me should show forth the praises of him who has called us out of into his what? Marvelous light. Jesus came. Something happened. The light came into this dark world. And may many experience that. Many that you're praying for and I'm praying for. May that brother experience above everything else at this Christmas time.